Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Perspective on legal football. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer dude and a judge.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am still just a dude.
I'm still just throwing that out there.
I know, it throws me off. You say it judging it. That extra rhythm in there messes me up.
Yeah, well, I figure I probably should. I mean, it's one more legal qualification I have now, I guess.
I'll get used to it eventually. The girls changed their intro on Still Buffering, and so Riley, it took her about 3 episodes before she finally got that smooth. So we'll get there. It's only been about 3 episodes, I guess.
That's right. It's still fresh.
That's right.
The powdered wig is still
fresh.
Still fresh and powdery.
It's fresh powder on the hill.
Well, last episode, we talked a little bit about English common law and Blackstone, who was a famed English scholar, and we brought up the fact that there were different things called inns of court in England, and those are things that they have here in the United States too. They're a little bit different, but when I was reading about the different inns of court in England, I thought that would be kind of interesting for us to talk about, because there are some different ins and outs of it, and they're very historical too.
Let's break it down, dude.
For some reason, I wanted to like get into some sort of rap there when like beats or beatboxing or something.
That's what I thought. Let's break it down. Break down the ins and the outs of the house.
So, inns of court. These are professional association for barristers in England. And there are also inns of chancery. If you remember last episode, I talked about the difference between chancery courts and courts of law.
Right.
Chancery courts are courts that give you equitable relief, whereas courts of law were ones that give you some sort of
inequitable relief.
Financial relief.
Same thing.
Same thing. So, as I said, these are professional associations in England for barristers. Now, in England, a barrister is an attorney who goes to court. And those are, in England, they're in other countries, they're distinguished from solicitors who have more direct access to clients, and they do kind of transactional type work.
Solicitors in our country have more direct contact with clients than it's kind of transactional work, too.
Yeah, sometimes if you get caught being a solicitor, you end up with having a barrister. Generally, barristers are the ones who are appointed judges, and like I said, they're rarely hired by clients directly. So the way this kind of came around is that barristers kind of had their own little clubs, and they were essentially independent from the solicitor, and the solicitor would hire a barrister to represent the client in court and kind of give them all the facts and everything like that, and they would just go argue. That's all they did. And they might draft the legal pleadings as well, but they were essentially just for litigation, not for the development of the case.
Do you think they had secret handshakes and knocks on the door so they'd know you were legitimate to come in that place?
Maybe.
He's one of ours. He did the knock.
Well, like, he's wearing a powdered wig and a robe. He must be good.
Yeah, but he could be from one of the other ones.
That's true.
And they all are so simple that they all use the same knock.
Who's there?
Oh, there we go. That's it.
Well, I think all fraternities and
that's like using password as your password.
All fraternities in our country basically have the same handshake probably too. I mean, there's only so many ways you can interlock fingers and wrists.
Yeah, I guess so.
Now, the interesting thing that I did not know is that all barristers must belong to one of the inns of court. They essentially have a supervisory and disciplinary function over their members. The inns also provide libraries, dining facilities, and professional accommodation. Each also has a church or a chapel attached to it, and is a self-contained precinct where barristers traditionally train and practice. But that was more kind of historically speaking. Now, the legal profession, they generally go to school similar to how we do here in the United States. So the ends of court aren't quite as important as they used to be, but they are still a pretty big deal.
You still have to belong to them.
You do, yeah.
But the reason that they have the church attached to them is that originally, dating back to like the 12th and 13th centuries, it was clergy that actually represented people in courts of law. And so that's why they brought them. They finally decided when the Church of England split with the Roman Church, That's when they decided we're not going to send our clergy out to argue man's law anymore, because they were breaking away from their religious teachings. But they were the ones that were learned. So you went to their houses to learn how to teach the law. So they started teaching the common man.
And the other
way, that's where you came in.
A common man. The other way they are linked in too is that the grounds that some of these ends of courts are located on were actually belong to the Knights Templar before they were the different ends of court.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting. There's a tie there too.
Hmm.
Now there's four different ends of court. There are ends of chancery, which are associated with the ends of court, but the ends of court are the big name ones.
Right.
The Honorable Society of Lincoln's Inn, the Honorable Society of the Inner Temple, the Honorable Society of the Middle Temple, the Honorable Society of Gray's Inn.
It's like Gray's Anatomy.
Sort of, yeah. Now, looking back about when these inns started, there have been lawyers in the temple, the Inner and Middle Temple, since 1320. In 1337, the premises were divided into the Inner Temple, where the lawyers resided, and the Middle Temple, which was also occupied by lawyers, by 1346. So we're talking quite a long time ago.
Right.
Lincoln's Inn, which is the largest, can trace its official records back to 1422, and the records of Gray's Inn began in 1569, but teaching is thought to have begun there in the 14th century. Now, in 1620, all the different leaders of the different inns decided at a meeting that they would not talk about the order of precedence as to which one came first.
So they all became equal.
They all became equal. It's an agreement now that no one says that we're older than the other. But the facts are that the history traces back to some further, but that's just because it's recorded history. The other history might go back too, but they just don't really know.
And I just want to make clear, all those dates were before I was born.
Even that 1621?
Yep, that's the closest, but that's still a couple years.
Well, the interesting thing last episode that I thought is, like, looking at these different ends of court, it reminded me of something. It reminded me of Harry Potter and the Hogwarts different houses.
Okay.
Well, if you think about it, they all have their different names, are located in different places, and it just seems like very English, you know, the Hogwarts and the different crests and whatnot.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you. I just don't know that much about Harry Potter. I've seen like a portion of two or three of the different movies, and I've been to Harry Potter World in Universal Studios.
I've been there too. I've drank frozen butterbeer.
Yeah, those are great. And I did that game where you chase the golden snitch around or something.
Oh, the roller coaster?
Well, it's not a roller coaster. It's like a 3D ride.
Yeah, I was on that with you.
Yeah, and it takes you around and makes you half sick because you don't really go anywhere, but you feel like you're going somewhere.
And you wait in line like in the little castle area. And
yeah,
they have all the different paintings that move and change.
That's about the extent of my Harry Potter knowledge, right there.
Mine too. I actually am not a Harry Potter expert, so
I know who the guy is, that Daniel Radcliffe guy.
Well, do you know what you do in the legal profession when you need somebody to talk about something that you don't know anything about?
You just start BSing.
Wrong.
Oh.
You get an expert witness.
Oh, okay. Well, do we have one?
Well, we do, actually.
Oh.
I have secured
an expert. Is that fella sitting next to you? I've been wondering, sitting over there giggling the whole time.
I have secured an expert witness for this.
And who might he be?
Well, this is my son, Salem Carlton.
Well, hello, Salem Carlton. How are you?
What's up, guys?
You're sitting here so quietly listening and giggling.
I couldn't help it. Tommy kills me. I can't keep a straight face.
He is pretty funny. So, you heard us. We think you might be an expert in Harry Potter.
I mean, if I'm an expert in anything, Harry Potter trivia. It's the highlight.
Is that what you're going to college for and studying right now?
I wish if they'd let me. I honestly, if I'd gone to school 10 years later, it might be a major. But.
Well, in order to qualify you as an expert witness, I have to lay down some guidelines and ask you some questions to make sure you are in fact a witness, because we can't have you in here all willy nilly just opining about Harry Potter if you're not actually a expert witness on the subject.
We don't want you making nothing up.
All right, let's do it then.
All right. So I'm just going to read off this list I found, but there's not necessarily a set list, but they all kind of get the same thing. This is a list I found online. So what is your occupation or profession?
I'm currently a college student.
Okay. And where are you a college student?
I'm a college student at the University of Memphis, Memphis, Tennessee. Go Tigers.
And what would you say your educational background consists of?
Well, I guess the standard years in public schooling, 3 years of college, and I've read the Harry Potter novels. In regards to the Harry Potter novels,
yeah,
let's get
to the Harry Potter novels.
Oh gosh, I've read those things more times than I can count. I mean, the books, I had to buy a new set of books because the old ones literally just fell to pieces.
And you actually got some new books this year for Christmas, did you not?
Yeah, actually, yeah, that was the highlight of Christmas. Is they did an illustrated edition of the books, and they're gorgeous. I mean, the book, the artwork's absolutely, it's brilliant. But
have you seen all the movies? Because I feel that true knowledge is contained in movies, but books are worthless. If there's a movie out there, the books are just a doorstop.
I have seen the SparkNote version of the books. Yeah, I've seen all 8 movies.
Correct. Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right.
We're good.
All right.
Have you gone to any kind of continuing Harry Potter education seminars, or have you gone to any, I guess they would be like a Harry Potter
Harry
con?
Potter con? Do they have those?
Probably.
You know, honest, probably. I will say, as far as post undergrad in the Harry Potter world, I have at this point in my Harry Potter life descended into the deep dark holes of the internet.
Fanfic,
yeah. Which isn't, in fairness, not as horrible or as overtly sexual as most of the internet makes it out to be. In fairness, a lot of it is.
Well, this is a family show, so
There's plenty of really excellent, well written stories by a lot of just great people that are just writing to write.
It's not just drawings of Harry Potter characters having sex, huh?
No, it's not. Okay, you can good. Avoid that totally. There's yeah.
Good, because from what I remember, there's only one girl in that show.
Okay, have you Salem? Have you ever dressed as a Harry Potter character for Halloween?
I was wondering where that was going.
Oh gosh, you know what? That's funny. I don't think I have, but I feel like Ian did one year. That's funny.
So you've never dressed as?
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one thing I probably got left off the list.
Was that on the list to be an expert? If you've ever dressed as whatever you're testifying about for a Halloween character?
No, it just kind of came to mind.
Have you ever dressed as a lawyer for Halloween before?
Yeah. What about that?
No.
Well, there you go.
One year I didn't dress up.
So you went naked?
No, so I went as myself, I guess. So that,
I'm
not, yes?
I'm now questioning those years spent in law school.
All right. Well, have you ever published any articles about Harry Potter? Any learned treatises?
No official publications as of this.
Have you drank a beer to Harry Potter?
I have.
Okay.
I think that
qualifies him as an expert witness.
All right. Well, I'm going to make a motion that we would deem Salem a expert witness for the purposes of testifying about Harry Potter and the Harry Potter houses.
So it is said, so it shall be.
All right. So feel free to talk about what you know.
Got it. Let's do it.
So he's going to compare the 4 houses of Inns to the houses of Harry Potter?
Well, he's going to kind of talk about, just in general, we're going to talk about the different houses, and he's going to give us some interesting insight into the different Harry Potter houses.
Okay.
And trivia.
We're going to do our best to draw that one-to-one comparison where we can.
All right.
But before we get on to that, I think it might be time for some motions before the court.
Why, yes, your judgeship in real life now. We would like to approach the bench and pay court costs.
All right, approach. Who do we have on the docket today?
We have on the docket our good friends at BetterHelp. That's help, H-E-L-P.
Is there something interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals?
BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist.
You can start communicating in under 24 hours.
That's less than a day. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online.
There's a broad range of experts in BetterHelp's counselor network, which may not be locally available in many areas. In smaller areas, you might not be able to find somebody to talk to.
Yeah, I mean, we're here in the metropolis of Huntington. Poor Salem has to go back to Memphis, that little old town there. All he's got to rely on is the king to help him there.
A little old town on the river.
Yeah, but he'll be able to dial up BetterHelp from there.
The service is available for clients worldwide.
You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor.
You'll get timely and thoughtful responses, plus you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy.
BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed.
And it's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available.
BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today.
You can visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily. www.betterhelp.com/reviews. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Visit betterhelp.com/court. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, and join the over 700,000 people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
And this would not be a proper ad if we did not have some sort of special offer for our listeners. Court-appointed listeners get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/court.
So, you don't want just any help, you want BetterHelp.
Wow, that's a zinger.
That's a zinger, huh? It just came to me. I can't help it.
Now, to talk about the different inns of court, the first inn of court we're going to discuss is Lincoln's Inn. And
Abe founded that one, right?
He did not. This predates Abe Lincoln. And back in 1422, according to the records, and the record books are called black books, that's when it dates
back. That's what color they were. They weren't very original thinkers.
They had everyone was kind of equal back then. And then in 1494, the inn became a little bit less democratic, and then only governors and benchers had a vote. And by the 16th century, only the benchers were in control. So it started out, there were different categories. There were clerks and fellows. They swore the same oath, and some fellows dined with the clerks in the common area because it cost less. And that was the way they did. Fellows eventually became called masters, and by 1505, no master was allowed to eat with the commons. Yeah, it's kind of
a lot of rules.
See, all of them, very, very rule-driven.
They have rules like that in Harry Potter?
Yeah, dude, you're already kind of hitting the head on the whole Slytherin type deal. The elitism, it's already there.
Now, the fellows were also divided into bencher, who were barristers or at the bar, and those not at the bar.
Oh, I thought you were saying bitcher. They're the ones that complain all the time.
No. Benchers. Like they were before the bench or before the bar.
Oh, okay.
So they had, and this is a theme that I've seen in comparing these different inns, that they have very regimented names for different things and a different progression and how you kind of became more involved and more in charge.
All right.
So there actually, at one point, there was no formal legal education needed, and the only requirement for a person to be called to the bar, this was originally, was for him to eat in 5 dinners a term at Lincoln's Inn and to have read the first sentence of a paper prepared for him by a steward. So it was a very very simple test.
Well, heck, if there's eating involved, I could be a lawyer.
You had to eat 5 meals and read a sentence.
I could do that.
I don't know. Could you have done it back in 1450?
Well, yeah, sure. I could do it pretty much any time.
So, Sam, what comparisons are you seeing here?
Yeah, so far it's as far as like the split, the division, you see a little bit of that sort of the Slytherin mentality, and you know, for what it's, the books do give them a bad rep a little bit, but there is that there is that level of sort of elitism where they've got it kind of split into very kind of strict. You've got your strict divisions and your masters and things like that. So that's already that sort of like you'd kind of draw the comparison to like the sort of the blood purity issues you get in Harry Potter and that kind of world.
You've already gone past me.
Yeah.
So, I hear words.
Yeah. I didn't realize Harry Potter had blood purity.
Yeah, it's
oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's basic. Yeah, it's J.K. Rowling's way of just writing about race, sort of.
So the next inn is called the Inner Temple. And this one dates back to 1337. And it's ruled by a governing council called Parliament, made up of masters of the bench or benchers. And it is actually led by a treasurer who is elected to serve a 1-year term. So the treasurer is basically what we might call a president or something like that. The temple gets its name from the Knights Templar, who originally, until they were dissolved in 1312, leased the land to the temple's inhabitants. So the Templars used to actually own that property until they were disbanded. And then once they left, then the Inner Temple was formed. as the ends of court.
They moved out due to gentrification.
Yeah. Probably beheadification back then, I think is what it was called. And it existed pretty stable for quite some time. The 18th century was a period of relative stability with an element of decline. The benchers of the time were described as opposed to all modern fashions, including newfangled comforts. With the inn's building deteriorating, much of the temple was rebuilt during the 19th century, most noticeably the hall and the library. Although fever and disease continued as a result of the inn's still outdated systems, the same water was used for both drinking and flushing the toilet.
Oh,
man.
These guys weren't that smart. No, they were pretty Spartan.
Man.
And in 1922, the Inner Temple has the distinction of calling Ivy Williams to the bar, making her the first female barrister in England and Wales.
1922, huh?
Yep. And Gandhi actually studied law at the Inner Temple.
Really?
Yes. And one of my personal favorites, Sir Francis Drake, was a member of the Inner Temple.
The duck?
The duck. The duck?
I don't know, somewhere in there.
Was he a duck?
Isn't a Drake a duck or something?
Oh, it's a male duck. Yeah, all right, got it. There we go. Yeah. Light bulb.
Yeah. It takes me a while.
Either that, that or thinking man's joke.
Either that or that singer from Canada.
Yeah. I was, what? I was like, what's his name of his boat? The Golden Duck?
No. Who stepped on a duck?
So what do you think about the Inner Temple?
It's interesting. The early on with the whole descending from the Knights Templar and things like that, you start to lean towards that sort of Gryffindor mindset where a lot of time the founder of the house, his whole every house has sort of like their artifact, and his artifact is just this great big sword and supposedly took part in different Muggle wars and possibly the Crusades, depending on what years you get. So the Knights thing is sort of a Gryffindor feel. And then you pull up, though, again, with the you pull later up where they start to rail against the idea of giving up tradition. And again, that's like a super sort of Slytherin thing. And the thing is,
they're all Slytherin.
They're
lawyers.
They're lawyers. I feel like we're going to keep running back to like, look, they're lawyers. They're all sort of Slytherin. They're all sort of that. They're cunning and ambitious, and they'll stab you in the back with legal fees.
That's right.
I don't like the way this podcast, this episode is going.
Yeah, you're basically trading a wand and a knife for
for a pen and a pound.
For a pen and a fast talk.
So one thing I forgot to mention is that each of these different inns of court kind of have their own coat of arms or their own designation. So I forgot to describe these and show this to you whenever we were trying to get your interpretation as to which Harry Potter house it might be.
Excellent. That's going to help.
That'd be germane to your it would, explanation. Yeah. So
animals.
The Lincoln Inn, theirs is a...
stovepipe hat?
No, it's not a stovepipe hat. It's kind of a blue shield.
A log.
It's a blue shield with some gold different symbols on it and like a... I guess it's a...
It looks like it's the
dragon.
I think it's a lion. A lion, actually. Yeah,
blue lion on it. So
it does.
So they have lions as their as their different things.
Yeah,
so.
Each house has an animal, and as it happens, the Gryffindor is the lions, which is interesting. But the colors are super super reminiscent of a Ravenclaw. That sort of blue and bronze is very much a Ravenclaw kind of color scheme.
Now the coat of arms of the Inner Temple is a Pegasus.
Yeah, we draw a blank on Pegasus. There's no,
you got no
there
comparison.
Is no Pegasus.
So that's drawn a complete blank, huh?
Well, the lion would be for all of them because that's what lawyers do.
Oh,
they're all lying.
Yeah. Oh. Lawyer jokes are coming fast and furious.
And the Pegasus, he's got a horn on his head, right?
Yeah.
Well, no, that's the unicorn.
Well, but I thought a Pegasus had one, too. Does he just have wings?
I thought he just had wings. I might be wrong.
Maybe just have wings. But usually when he goes off on a tangent like that, I just agree with him.
You just let him roll.
He burns out kind of quick that way.
I was thinking he had a horn, and that indicated that lawyers are horny.
Horny for
knowledge.
Horny for justice.
You got to make that like your slogan now. Now that you're a judge, that's got to be like your Can you get your own judge show?
Come to my courtroom.
Like, your
I'm horny for justice.
Can't you see like the super standard lawyer commercial?
That might be
for
the firm.
Every Mabim Bam fan in the country would come to your court just to take their picture by your sign.
Probably, yeah. It's a very Mabim Bam type phrase.
Yeah, that is theirs. We stole it. It's in the family.
Borrowed it. Now, the next one is the Middle Temple. And the Middle Temple is the western part of the original temple the Knights Templar occupied. And it abuts the Inner Temple, as you might have imagined.
It abuts it.
It abuts it. And it was destroyed pretty much in 1678. And it had to be rebuilt. And one of the interesting things is the Thames had frozen over. And they had to use beer from the temple cellars to use to fight the fire when the temple was on fire, which is kind of interesting. And it was eventually only contained by blowing up some buildings with gunpowder. So they essentially had to blow up some buildings to kind of isolate the fire so it couldn't spread.
That sounds like a bad plan.
Well, the Lord Mayor of London tried to exploit the occasion to assert his own jurisdiction over the temple, which was independent of the city because they kind of had their own, own thing going on.
Yeah. Slytherin move.
And
yeah, they were like the D.C. of...
Pretty much, yeah. And the mayor actually turned back a fire engine, which was on its way to help fight the fire from the city. So they were forced to throw beer from their own cellars and blow up their own buildings to try to fight this fire, which is why they were lawyers or barristers, not firefighters.
Let's throw beer on the fire. I got an idea. It says the drunk guy living in the basement.
Hey, y'all, watch this.
Take a drink and throw the rest on the fire.
The Middle Temple Hall, which was one of the most famous buildings of the Middle Temple, began in 1562 and was completed in 1572. And it was opened in 1576 by Queen Elizabeth I. So it dates back a long time as well.
Yeah.
Its hammer beam roof has been said to be the best in London. Hmm. And one of the tables at the end of the hall is made from timbers of the Golden Hind, the ship used by Sir Francis Drake to circumnavigate the globe.
Man, that same duck came back.
He did. And this is a picture I found online of the Middle Hall Temple. And what do you think that looks like, Salem?
It looks like the Great Hall of Hogwarts, actually. Yeah.
It does, doesn't it?
That's really convenient.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting. A lot of these were actually different locations for the Harry Potter movies. It's kind of interesting, I thought. And this is actually a picture.
Yeah. Wow. Actually, I think I recognize that. From like the, I swear, it's like, I think it's like from the fourth movie. That's wild.
So I wasn't totally off with my whole thing about inns and
I don't think so, no.
Yeah. Another interesting thing is that the first recorded performance of Shakespeare's play Twelfth Night occurred in the Middle Temple Hall on the 2nd of February, 1602. And people say that Shakespeare himself was actually probably present for that performance.
He was actually probably there.
Maybe.
That was a definite maybe.
Potentially.
Total coin flip.
Allegedly.
That's a very lawyer way to put it.
I know.
Possibly. He could have been there, in theory.
I mean, there's nothing to say he wasn't.
Yeah. Can we prove it in a court of law?
No.
All right.
Definitely not.
Do we have his credit card slip?
The inns, all of them actually played a pretty important role in the English Renaissance theater. Different literary figures and playwrights and things like that resided at the hall. And a lot of times they use these big different open areas to house their plays and whatnot.
So, yeah, they would perform there and see what the lawyers thought, huh?
That's right.
Because they were all learned men, so they'd know if it was a good show or not, right?
Certainly. Now, the Middle Temple, their supreme body is also called the Parliament, and it's made up of benchers, judges, and senior barristers who are elected for life. And again, it's headed by a treasurer who is elected annually, the treasurer being like the president. And the parliament approves the...
He's elected annually?
Annually.
Oh, annually.
Yep.
Okay.
That's a much better deal.
Yeah. I'm not sure what the other means.
I leave that open to interpretation.
And the parliament approves the budget and the call of the student members to the bar. So they determine who's going to be called up to the bar to become benchers. And members of the royal family...
Been in the batting cages, hoping to get called up from the bench.
So the members of the royal family who are made honorary benchers are known as the royal benchers.
The royal benchers. Well, there's more original thinking there going on. Boy, that was a hard one to come up with.
Now, the Middle Temple, their badge and coat of arms is kind of like a shield with a cross on it and a lamb.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, the animal doesn't line up. Mm-hmm. The red is still sort of like a Gryffindor thing, but from what I can tell from the house, honestly, it's really given me that kind of Hufflepuff vibe. You know what I mean?
You're getting a
their
Hufflepuff
place
vibe.
Burned down, and they were kind of like, "Ah, what do we do? Throw the bear because we don't know what to do." You know, and that's like a super. It feels like if that was going to happen to anybody, it was going to happen to a bunch of Hufflepuffs. poor Hufflepuffs.
I like that. I'll go with that one.
I don't know about Hufflepuffs. I know about H.R. Puffin stuff.
Yeah, wasn't that an old '60s Disney thing?
Or I don't know about Disney, but it was a kid's show.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the last one is Gray's Inn. And Gray's Inn internal records date to 1569, but the area's been occupied and teaching law since 1370. But again, nobody knows exactly for certain, and they don't really care because...
We're all equal now.
We're all equal. We're all old. Their system is very different than the others. It's much more confusing.
Than their Ravenclaws. Problem solved. That's it. That's the four houses. Nailed it.
Ravenclaws are confusing?
Well, they're supposed to be clever, and you know how clever people are.
They outsmart themselves.
Yep.
So in the internal records from 1569, there were four types of members. Those who had not yet been called to the bar, utter barristers, ancients, and readers. Utter barristers were those who had been called to the bar but were still studying. Ancients were those who had called to the bar and were allowed to practice, and readers were those who had been called to the bar, were allowed to practice, and now played a part in educating law students there at Gray's Inn and at the Inns of Chancery, which were associated with it. The interesting thing is that the other Inns of Court did not recognize ancients as a degree of barrister and had benchers were basically corresponding with readers. So the ancient degree, that didn't really line up with anything else. And the other end said, "You're an ancient? Well, that didn't really mean anything to us.
So, we're not going to recognize you."
Yeah. The Gray's Inn is run by Pension, which is the ultimate governing body. So
Pension?
Instead of Parliament, they call it the Pension.
Oh. That's like what you get when you retire.
Yeah, but that's what they call it. Their Parliament is basically the Pension.
Hmm.
And historically, during the 15th and 16th centuries, it grew pretty quickly and had a lot of prestige and reached its pinnacle during Elizabeth I, during her reign. And it was at that time, it was the largest with over 200 barristers recorded as members there. And It was during that period, they became noted for their masks and parties they threw, like their mask parties. And Shakespeare is believed to perform the Comedy of Errors there. So again, you have Shakespeare performing at these inns.
Allegedly,
possibly, happened sometimes.
Can't prove he didn't.
We're just going to say he did.
He was dressed in disguise. He had a mask on.
Now, Gray's system was much more regimented than the others, it seems like. And
would you say Gray's had an anatomy to how they did it?
I would say they did. And before you could be called to the bar, you had to be there for about 12 to 14 years, and you would study first at Oxford or Cambridge, or at one of the Inns of Chancery, which were dedicated to the different dedicated legal
institutions. Man, it was tougher back in those days than it is now.
Oh, for sure.
12 or 14 years after you complete Oxford?
Yeah.
I'd be 12 or 14 years getting through Oxford. Let alone then studying, I'd be dead before I ever got certified or benched.
If you studied at Oxford or Cambridge, you would have to spend 3 years working towards a degree. Or if you went to one of the Inns of Court, or I'm sorry, in one of the Inns of Chancery, you'd have to study for a year before you could seek admission into the Inn of Court there at Gray's. And at that point, you were considered an inner barrister, and you would have to study in private and take part in moots. And
moots,
they mean practice trials. Oh. And they still have that in law school today. They have the moot court team.
Huh.
So it's basically a trial just among the students to practice to hone their advocacy skills.
I see.
And they'd serve 6 to 9 years as an inner barrister. And then, assuming they had done everything they were supposed to, and they had twice argued moots in one of the Inns of Chancery, twice in the hall of his Inn of Court, and twice in the Inn Library.
Then you can be an outer barrister.
No, then you were an utter barrister.
An utter barrister.
Yeah, and then you were expected to supervise the different moots among the lower students.
I swear, Ravenclaws, I swear.
And then, after 5 years as that utter, you were allowed to practice in court, and after 10 years, you were made an ancient.
That's utter nonsense.
And by then you would be an ancient because it would take forever.
Yeah. It takes forever. You're let's see, add those up. You're at least in your 50s by the time you get there.
I'd say so.
And in that era, I think the average cause or average lifespan was 49 years. So, yeah. So you never quite made it.
Yeah. You always got to keep striving.
Yeah.
Now, Gray's Inn doesn't actually have a coat of arms as the other. But they do have a gold griffin on a black field as one of their symbols.
Yeah, well, I mean, a griffin's what? Part eagle. It's part eagle, part lion, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ravenclaw's symbol is the eagle. So it's like halfway there, and everything else, I mean, has lined up. Like the endless amount of schooling.
Well, Raven's black, right?
Yeah.
So that's on a black background, didn't he say?
Yeah.
So there you go. Yeah. I think Ravenclaw's right on.
I mean, between the endless amount of schooling, the way more than necessarily complication of the system.
Yeah.
These guys are super Ravenclaws. It's like not even close. These are the ultimate Ravenclaws.
The ultimate Ravenclaws?
Yeah. Actual Ravenclaws are like, you know what? A little too much school. We can't handle it.
So we proved one of two things. What's either that J.K. Rowling got a lot of her thought processes from studying these ends of court, or is that right? Mm-hmm. Ends of court?
Ends of court.
These ends of court. Or else they, I forget what the other part was now.
Well, Salem and I were discussing this on the way over here, and he has a theory about the whole different kind of house system and whatnot.
Yeah, it's interesting because the house system is actually not really so much a lawyer thing or a Hogwarts thing so much as it is just like a super, super British thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's super, super British. And even now, generally, different English boarding and prep schools are still set up in those kinds of systems where you have your different houses. And it didn't translate very well to outside of the UK editions. It was a super sort of it was a confusing concept. It didn't translate very well.
Well, the other thing that it seems too is a lot of it is built on like being together, all of them being together and bonding and doing these things. They want them actually living together, eating together, all these kind of things. So it goes beyond just going to school and learning it on your own. It has to do with dealing with other people and working with other people.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's part of the reason that...
mentorship.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's part of the reason that, you know, it's probably so popular in the UK. And the reason that it's so heavily emphasized in the books is each different house in the books, they all have their own separate part of the castle. And you live all 7 years in that part of the castle. And you take classes with those people. And you play inter-house sports with those people. So it is very much a... almost like a secondary family of sorts in the books. And in this case, yeah, it's the same sort of very much the groupings are very – they're tight-knit groups.
It really does sound like that's where she got her ideas, right? From these.
Mm-hmm. Now, the inns of court in England, they used to be much more important. And they were the ones who administered disciplinary and things like that. But now each inn of court does not really have its own kind of disciplinary board. I mean, I'm sure they do for certain things.
Internal reasons.
Internal, yeah.
Yeah.
But – the functions are now all shared between the four ends with the Bar Standards Board, which is a division of the General Council of the Bar, acting as a disciplinary body, and the Inns of Court and Bar Educational Trust providing education. So I think that now it seems like the Inns of Court are almost kind of like a continuing legal education or helping with education stuff, and all the inns together seem to be kind of the disciplinary board if somebody's screwing up or doing something wrong.
Hmm.
And one of the interesting things is that some of these different Inns of Court buildings were actually in the Harry Potter movies and also in movies like Sherlock, and they're used in a lot of different things that you might see.
Because they're so traditional.
They're so traditional and they're
ancient.
I mean, and they're just like when you think of England or UK and things like that, you just think of buildings like that.
Yeah.
it's just kind of the way it is.
Well, I noticed when I was looking at it that they used to have one that was called, like, I don't know if I'll say it right, the Surgeon's Inn.
Yeah.
That it was it was a custom for senior judges to join the Surgeon's Inn. So from the four houses, the senior ones would join the Surgeon's Inn, and thereby leaving the inn they were in where they had practiced as barristers. And this meant that the masters of the bench of the four barristers' inns of court were mostly themselves barristers, since there is now no Surgeon's Inn.
Yeah.
They said they dissolved it in 1877, and its assets were controversially distributed amongst the existing members.
Yeah. Were there any Harry Potter houses which were disbanded?
No, actually. They're pretty much, everything stays pretty much the same. There wasn't ever like some fifth house that secretly got kicked out or anything. But the founder of the
secret,
Slytherin,
the secret Jackson brother,
right? Yeah, there's like Gryffindor, Ravenclaw, Hufflepuff, Slytherin, and then like Joe's house. it does say that part of the rift that you find in between houses and the school rivalries, it does date back to the beginning of Hogwarts after school had been open and they had been teaching for a number of years. The divide and split on who should be allowed in the school sort of grew and grew until they eventually had to throw Slytherin, the actual founder, the man, they had to throw him out of the castle. They had to ban him from the castle.
Hmm.
So if anybody's being thrown out, the abandoned, that's probably your mark.
Well, these were the judges, though.
Yeah.
Get out of our house. Well, I think they formed their own house. They were kind of like, we're special.
Well, somebody opened this up and said, this needs to be the best of the best, the cream of the crop.
Yeah.
But I don't know how they got there. I don't think they were voted on. I think they decided, I'm ready to go there. And they would apply, I've served this long here and I want to get in. The other one would say, okay, come on.
Sounds good. Come on in.
Started their own club. They had their little clubhouse, hung a sign on the door, said, no girls allowed. Beers, just like Spanky.
Beers in the basement. We use it to drink and fight fires.
And then we had a chief justice in the late 70s.
Yeah.
That was very fond of the ends of houses, and he wanted to incorporate a system like that in America.
He did. Chief Justice Warren Burger led a movement to create ends of court in the United States, which was going to be kind of loosely modified on the English ends.
I think he hyphenated his last name. It's Warren Burger King.
He was Warren Burger Chef. He went out of business.
Yeah.
In 1985, he and others established the American Ends of Court Foundation to promote and formally charter local ends of court across the U.S. And rather than kind of the almost lodging fellowship hall that these ends of court in England were kind of, this was essentially devoted to promoting professionalism, civility, ethics, and legal skills among American lawyers.
Yeah, it's more or less something you affiliate with, like the Rotary Club or something like that. And you get in as a lawyer, and then you can go to continuing education, and they'll have group meetings and stuff like that, but there is no actual location or something.
No. They usually meet probably at some place like a Denny's or something like that, or not really, I don't know.
But they did say that most major cities have more than one.
They do. I was looking, there's actually only one end of court in the entire state of West Virginia, in Wheeling.
That doesn't surprise me.
It's in Wheeling, though, which does surprise me.
Well, they're right up there with other more forward states.
Yeah. There's quite a few in Florida. And I know, like, in particular, there was one in Melbourne, and I think there was, like, four or five that were in Jacksonville, too. So yeah. There's quite a few. And the U.S. does not require attorneys to be members of any kind of ends of court, and it's basically the functions of the state bar associations are kind of what the ends of court do here. So that would be kind of maybe more of an equivalency, would be the bar associations. And some states require attorneys to belong to the official bar association. The state bar of Michigan, for example, while other states, such as Illinois, do not make membership of an official bar association part of your licensure. So here in West Virginia and also in Florida, I'm a member of both those bars, and you have to be a member of the bar. If you're not a member of the bar, you can't practice law. It's just the way it is.
And if you're not in the bar, you can't get a drink.
That's true. And the American ends of court, they don't really have any kind of official relationship with the English ends. They do have a declaration of friendship, which was signed between them.
Yeah.
And they do some sort of exchange programs, too, where they will send some younger barristers and younger lawyers back and forth to kind of experience how it is on the other side of the pond.
Yeah, and I know how that works. They send the ones they don't want.
Yeah.
Here, we'll give you two Smedleys.
I'll trade you a Smedley.
A Smedley for a shyster. Ireland has some, too, there. They have an Inn of Court of Northern Ireland, and then the Republic of Ireland has only one Inn of Court, and it's the Honorable Society of King's Inns.
Sounds
so they follow that too, yeah.
It's a very common law-ish type thing.
Yeah. Well, if you'd have told me ahead of time you were going to be able to make comparisons to Harry Potter, I wouldn't have believed you. But it sure worked out. Now I'm more convinced than ever. That's where J.K. Rowling got the idea.
Quite possibly.
It's not bad. We kind of managed to hit all four houses, actually. Yeah. Sort of lined up.
Yeah. I mean, at least the general structure and the way that it works and the way they live there and things like that, it wouldn't be too far-fetched to just draw that into what she came up with.
Well, yeah. Even the pictures look very similar to the movies and probably the drawings in the books.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I'm not officially saying that this means that lawyers are in fact wizards, but it's food for thought. It could be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I can't tell you all, so we're going to have to move on.
Is that a wand in your hand? No, don't stand so close to me at the urinal.
I'm just happy to see.
Really happy.
So that's going to bring us to...
Legal briefs.
So Legal Briefs is the part of the show where I ask Tommy different legal questions about the things we talked about. So Tommy... What are the different ends of courts names that we talked about?
The Middle Templar, or the Middle Temple.
Yes.
The Gray's Inn, the Lincoln's Inn, and the other one's another temple, a Grand Temple.
No, the Inner Temple.
Inner Temple and Middle Temple.
Yep.
Okay.
That's pretty good, though.
I think there's two temples in there.
All right, now. It's technically not about ends of court, but you've heard Salem throw out all the different Harry Potter houses here.
Yeah.
So name as many Harry Potter houses as you can. Hogwarts houses.
Hogwarts. That's Gryffindor, Hufflepuff, Ravenclaw, and Slytherin.
Boom. He's 4 for 4.
Wow.
Yeah.
He knows it. He knows his Harry Potter better than he knows his ends of court.
I mean, in fairness, I know my Harry Potter better than I know my ends of court, too. So.
Well, I would have forgotten at least one or two of those if you hadn't just gone over them. That refreshed what I've heard, because I've heard my kids and stuff discussing those things. So. I knew vaguely what you were talking about.
Now, can you describe the difference between American ends of court and English ends of court?
English ends of court, you have to belong to one of the four ends of court to be a barrister. Mm-hmm. In America, it's just kind of a choice that you join as kind of like a club in continuing education and socializing and stuff like that. So it's not required.
It's not. And one of the other important things about the American ends of court is they try to promote civility and professionalism, which I assume is what the... Justice Berger thought that English barristers had that we didn't.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like, we need to make ourselves more like the English, like very polite.
Well, you know, if you think about it, if you're studying with these people for years, I mean, 10 and 14 years that they're in these places and you're living with them and eating with them, you go out and you got a case and you're going up against one of them. It'd be like a fraternity brother or something, you know?
Yeah.
You're not going to be nasty and dirty with them.
Or maybe.
I mean, I would think, unless you didn't like them.
Maybe even more so. I don't know. Well, I would say that the bar here in Huntington is much smaller than it was in Florida, and it's much more collegial.
Mm-hmm.
People here, like I see them out a lot more than I did any of the attorneys in Florida, because we're just in a smaller area, and it's not uncommon to argue against somebody just, you know, tooth and nail in court over some issue, and then 20 minutes later you're having lunch, you don't even talk about it, because it's just kind of one of those things. So it's kind of similar to that.
That's separating work and personal life, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's an important thing to do. So which Harry Potter house do you think you are, Tommy? And which, let's do this two-part question. Which ends of court would you belong to, and which Harry Potter house do you think you'd belong to?
Well, I would say, let's see. I would want to be one of the old ones, so I'd want to be the Middle Temple.
The Middle Temple?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're the ones, you know, they got the beer in the basement too, so.
Well, I was going to say you should be part of Gray's Inn, because I think you're an ancient.
What a setup. Man,
I wrote that one out.
Oh God! Well, you're probably right. I should have been studying more, though. I don't know if I've been promoted yet.
Salem, what do you think?
Oh man, I guess if I was going to be in the court, man, I couldn't. I don't think I could handle all of the complications of the Grays, and I don't think I'm ready to just throw away all the beer on the fire. But I, you know, I don't mind this. I don't mind the idea of coming from the Knights of Templar. That doesn't sound like too bad a gig.
So you'd be one of the temples?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I would definitely want to be with the ones that had enough. They had enough beer in the basement to put out a fire.
Yeah, that's a lot of beer.
Yeah, I think I'm going with that. So I'm going to be part of the Middle Temple.
Well, and if it was Harry Potter, I like Gryffindor. If they have a nicer jersey.
I do.
It's but better color scheme.
I'm probably more Nike. Of a Hufflepuff.
That's the house, the ends of court that you picked for yourself. Those are the Hufflepuffs. Yeah. You decided we're the Hufflepuffs.
Yeah.
Well, there you
double
go.
Double down on Hufflepuff.
Hufflepuff or HR Puffin stuff. That's enough.
I took a test actually before we did this episode to determine which Harry Potter house I would be.
Mm-hmm.
And I am 30% Gryffindor, 29% Ravenclaw, 21% Slytherin, and 20% Hufflepuff. That makes me really nothing, kind of. I guess I'm typically...
You're a mutt.
I'm a mutt.
We're all mutts. That's what America is. It's a melting pot full of mutts. I wish I could recite that Bill Murray thing that he does in Stripes. Mm-hmm. That's what that comes from. Is it? We're a country of mutts.
So, Salem, which Hogwarts house are you?
Oh, man.
Have you ever taken a quiz?
It's funny. I don't recall ever taking the actual... They've got, like... I mean, there's about 1.5 million different sorting quizzes. But the there's an official... They've got an official Pottermore website, essentially, mm-hmm. where you can go for all that sweet, sweet extra content. And they've got an actual quiz up there set up by Rowling and different people who have helped kind of put together mm-hmm. books. And I actually have not taken that one. At this point in my life... I'd probably end up probably in Ravenclaw, probably.
Think you're Ravenclaw?
Yeah.
Well, I probably think I look the most like Hagrid.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable Podcast for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Bim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out, though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Hello, and welcome to Tommy's Random Thoughts. Today's random thought is exercise blockers. As mentioned in my New Year resolution thought, I work out on a regular basis at the Y. It's just a 45-minute routine through the Nautilus during my lunch break, but it is important to me to get it done each day. I use the Nautilus because you don't have to spend time changing weights and you don't need a spotter, so I can just mind my own business and power on through. If I can get my workout done, get showered, and back to work, I feel better the rest of the day. So when I go, I am on a mission. Unfortunately, not everyone else there is quite so concerned about getting an actual workout. Since there is a college rec center in town, most of the younger people in town go there to work out. So the Y, where I go, is mostly old people. I know, people who live in glass houses shouldn't throw rocks. I realize that at my age, I am considered an old person. When I was a teenager, I would have looked at someone my age and figured that they have one foot in the grave. Funny how perspective changes those things as I look at myself as relatively young for my age now. But that's just me. Now, back to the other old people that get in my way. Most of them are retired, and therefore have nowhere to be and nothing else to do. This is probably the highlight of their day. But it is not because of the good workout they are getting. It is because they stand around and talk with other retirees for long periods of time. Now, if they are off to the side or in the corner, then it doesn't bother me. But when one is sitting on a machine I need and the other one talking to him seems like he is only there to see who he can talk to, then I have a problem with that. While women are known as the talkers of our species, it is usually old men that do this at the Y. They literally just come to block machines and talk. they are just one step better than the guys that come and walk around the locker room naked for an hour or so, never use any exercise equipment or swim or anything, and then eventually they get dressed and leave. I don't know what their deal is, and I don't want to know. The older women don't talk that much, but they get on a machine and do about 5 pounds forever. Now, I am not an expert on workouts, so maybe there is some kind of science behind it, but I am of the opinion that if you don't feel it, that you just eventually get tired of the motion, this is not really helping. If you sit there for 20 minutes moving 5 pounds back and forth until you are bored, is that really an exercise? Just stay home and pick up a can of beans off the pantry shelf and put it back about 100 times. That should be about the equivalent of what you're doing. Getting through my workout in a timely manner depends on moving from machine to machine. I may have options at some point, but if both machines are blocked, then I just end up standing and waiting. Then I start skipping machines, which is not good for my workout. Don't even get me started on people sitting on machines and scrolling through their phones. They should be banned, period. At Disney World, they have fast passes you can get, and I think the Y should issue those to people that have a job and are on time constraints. The exercise blockers can just pack a lunch and make a day of it. I mean, what else have they got to do anyway? This has been Tommy's Random Thought.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.